Spoken, mate.
I haven't thought about flying for a long time. I have dreamed of that moment when I was alone above the clouds for a long time. I have dreamed waking up in a room surrounded in blue and green grass for more years than I could dream of memory. I haven't walked back into the past or scratched on the doors of my origins, where it all came from, to hold up that cape for the last time.
Return to Kent Town 10th Year Anniversary Edition is a revised version of Andy N's first poetry book. The book can be purchased from Amazon and it contains numerous additional material.
Spoken Label.
Hi, it's Andy N from Spoken Label. Spoken Label was originally set up at the beginning of 2016 and records show it started off really as a one-off podcast chatting to writers, poets and artists. Over time, it became monthly, then weekly, and occasionally nowadays it goes on that to a more regular basis. To date, I've done over 330 sessions and I'm always looking for new poets, writers, artists, singer-songwriters, general interesting creative people to come onto the podcast. You can find this on all the usual networks over Apple, iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Podbay, and dozens of others. But it does have a central database of Spoken Label, which is all one word, .bandcamp.com. Obviously now, to help me with the running costs of this podcast, I'm always grateful for any kind of donation to assist me with it. You can either do the donation through the Bandcamp page by putting in a fee to download one of the free podcasts, or send it over to my PayPal to aen1mpo@yahoo.co.uk. My email address again is aen1mpo@yahoo.co.uk. Enjoy the podcast. Take care. Bye.
Spoken
Hey guys, Andy N, Spoken Label, back in the house. Sunday evening. Bit warmer today, but it's still a bit bloody cold. So, anyway, we're over to a wonderful part of the world today, Doncaster. And I've got a lady with me, and I've just working this out before, actually. And we'll come on to more in a minute. But I first met my guest today, Kate Jenkinson, in person last year when she was one of the supports for Clive Osmond's fantastic show at Randy Horton's night in Stockport. But I'd seen you around, Kate, and on the Zoom thing.
Yeah.
Probably at the beginning of lockdown, wasn't it? Does that sound about right to you?
Absolutely right, yeah. I think I was doing some poetry workshops and there was an open mic that Scott Coe attended, and I heard Scott's performance poetry, and I kind of messaged him and said, are there any more nights like this during the lockdown? And he said, yeah, loads. And that's when he introduced me to Ooh Beehive and Like a Block from the Blue, and then I just got into the scene. I think during lockdown there was something on nearly every night. It was just brilliant.
Yes. Yeah, it was a fascinating time back then. You think about it, it was 4 years ago now, wasn't it, as well, really?
No, so
it was,
can't believe it.
Like that, yeah. It did, like, it was, like I said, told you before, like, I've been around the live circuit for some years before, and me and Amanda, the wife, of course, we had quite a good headline set up, actually, in Sale, which we'll come on to in a minute, because you've got family down in Sale, bizarrely.
We have, yeah.
Yeah, but then it all got put onto Zoom, literally overnight, and I thought it was due to happen. Yeah. The episode just chaos, because I remember that. But then we did our first night at Speakeasy on Zoom, and we had about 300 people trying to log on to the Zoom room.
Oh my goodness.
And it crashed.
I'm not surprised.
It was absolutely carnage. But then we both found that, like you said, there were so many nights just setting up, moving on to Zoom, weren't they? So,
yeah, it was brilliant.
It was great fun back those days. And it was like, you're right, we were doing me and Amanda, what, 3 a week, 4 a week sometimes.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I couldn't leave the flat because I'm diabetic.
Oh, right. I just did workshops. I even developed some of my own workshops for my friends as well. And that's an interesting story I can tell you about later. But yeah, I just loved it. It was when I got back into the poetry scene, big style.
Yeah, it's been a it was a fascinating time, really, like I said. But yeah, now obviously we better backtrack yourself, and obviously I know from sources, that's a good way of putting it, which we'll reveal more in a minute. Right? Yeah, a source. I'll do it that way then. Keep the audience guessing.
Yeah.
But I know you were writing, you started writing when much younger, didn't you? Then it's come back to you a different stage in your life, really, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, I loved creative writing at school. It was my favourite thing. But I got put off by several teachers, and I was also good at science and I loved biology. So I just carried on the science route when I went to university, and I just kind of left the poetry and spoken word stuff behind. I went in for a competition and got some critical feedback that was really not helpful, and I thought I don't need to put myself in this position. I carried on writing though, Andy. I've always enjoyed going to workshops, usually face to face. That was my way of having a good time.
Yeah, the same. But it's great when you do online workshops, but it's a different sort of feel, I think, when you do them in person. Because I've run ones over the years in person. I've done them on Zoom as well. It's interesting experience.
Yeah, different. They're very different. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but like I said before, now we'll tell people next then how you actually told me to research you, and I didn't even know you'd done one of these. That's why I was even better on it until earlier on today. So you did a TED talk a couple of years ago, and he sent me the link over before. It was brilliant. So,
yeah, it did. Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So, what happened? So, I run my own business and have done since 2016. And I love to network with people, I love meeting new people. And I met somebody who runs networking events, basically lived just behind me. In Warrington, when I lived in Warrington, and she said she wanted to get a TEDx license for Warrington, and asked me to put in an application to be one of the first speakers at the first Warrington TEDx. And there were 112 applications, and it was a competitive process. And I basically, because I'm so passionate about poetry, said, well, I want to be the voice of poetry in business. And that was my kind of big idea for TEDx. And I got selected and I did a TEDx talk. And she waited until after the lockdowns to run the event, and it ran in 2022. I've done a TEDx talk.
Wow. Now, obviously, I said I've done it myself. I told you that before, but mine was done on Teams at the end of lockdown. It was not in person, certainly, but mine had a basket for people tuning, but that was a terrifying experience on doing that on Teams. How big a crowd was it for you to do it in person?
So when you run your first TEDx event, they cap it at 100 people, but I mean that's 100 people sitting down, then there's all the volunteers and all the support, so it's probably about 120 people in the room. And it was on a big stage at the Parr Hall in Warrington. And I had to remember my whole talk, which was terrifying, seriously. Even in the dress rehearsal on the same day, I still couldn't remember part. I've got a really little funny story I can tell you about this, actually.
Please do.
A lot of people don't know this, but it makes me laugh. There was a section of my talk that I just couldn't remember the order of it. And because of my brain being very different from a lot of people, it remembers acronyms. So when I was learning to pass tests at school, I've got no visualization, but I can remember words and acronyms. And so I thought, is there an acronym that will help me remember this bit in my talk? So I looked at all the first letters of the sentences and they spelt pisser. So I thought, I won't forget that.
No.
So I'm stood on the stage going through this part of my talk going P-I-S-S-E-R. So I could remember, nobody could see that.
Oh, dear. Yeah, that can only happen to you, that game.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So
I did it almost word perfect. And of course, they edited out the only bit that I couldn't remember.
Yeah, completely. So yeah. Obviously, like you said before, since then, obviously, I know you've done spoken word on person and in obviously on Zoom and stuff, and I don't mean to talk about teams, but that itself to me is a big difference altogether. And did you find that a really different experience what's happened to you since, really, with your spoken word?
Well, I think because, well, before lockdown, I'd started to go to some events in Liverpool and do slams. And I've always had to sort of refer to my poetry and read it from, you know, something printed out. So in person, I'd be probably a bit more nervous than doing it online because, you know, you can read it without people knowing you're reading it. So that always helped. But it's a different experience, Andy. You know, when you're doing it online, you can't really gauge the reaction. And I do like to sort of feel the mood of the room. So that is just a whole different experience when you're actually there. You can pace your poem according to the responses that you get. So, yeah, it's just a different experience. And I like both of them. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree completely. They are. Everything you do, like it's, I've done all kinds of things on my side of things, but we'll go on that another day. Right? Yeah, but I do agree with you. It's a fascinating experience indeed. Of it. Now, I want to move on next because obviously, like, you've definitely jumped a few, changed a few gears recently, haven't you? Because with a wonderful Ashley Edge, with Peter Penn's spoken label, has been on twice, Ashley, as well. Well, now a pair of you are now running, aren't you? Your own open mic night, Prickly Pear.
That's right, yeah. So
tell us about what made you both, I know how you both first met. Actually, I know what Ashley's like. Ashley told me the full story, but you can tell people like yourself what in a minute. But tell us about what made you want to do Prickly Pear then.
So it all started out last year when I decided I was going to do National Poetry Writing Month. But rather than follow somebody else's prompts, I was going to make my own prompts up.
Yeah.
And I made them up based on the theme of neurodiversity. And it was the first month that I actually managed to do poetry writing every day. And Ashley responded to several of those prompts. And at the end of that, I got such a good response, both from Facebook people contributing poetry and, believe it or not, LinkedIn, which is where I'm also active. I decided to do an open mic for people who wanted to share their neurodiversity poetry. And I wanted to have two features at that event. Ashley was a feature and Lauren Ruddock was a feature. Mm. And they both, you know, and it was such good fun. Ashley and I just decided to keep doing it and rename it, but make sure that it was for people with either hidden disabilities or disabilities. We wanted it to be an accessible platform. And we wanted to make sure we created a really safe space for people so that they could share this type of poetry. And that was the original idea behind it, following those neurodiversity prompts. And, of course, that'll be almost a year come April.
It's terrifying, isn't it? Because,
I know. You know,
we better mention, make people aware of what we're talking about with April here. Because April is National Poetry Writing Month.
That's right.
What we know. Now, I first started that, oh my good grief, about 10 years ago now, would you believe?
Yeah.
And the first 2 years I did, I followed all the prompts.
Yeah.
And it was an absolute bloody nightmare. It was.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the end of it, I was like that. My hair was going grey. It was unfolding out.
It's scary.
Yeah.
And I struggled because, I don't know, the neurodivergent brain, sometimes people would put a prompt out there and I go, it doesn't inspire me at all.
Yeah. Well, I'm the same. I'm in the same boat as you. And it was stressing me out because I'm diabetic as well. So by the end of it, after the second year, I said,
you were ill.
Yeah. I was nearly ill. And I thought, I'm not doing it again. So after that, I've always followed me on prompts on that.
Absolutely.
Last couple of years, I've tried to do themes.
Oh,
and it was
like,
do my own themes like you did. And this year, I'm going to do sonnets and we'll try and write 30 theme you don't like, spring-based sonnets.
I don't know. Listen, I'm a biologist. I've got nothing against nature. I love it. I just find that a lot of poetry that just focuses on that, because I've got no visual imagery, so I can't, it's like I can't see it.
Yeah. No, it's my case. I've done about 3 sonnets in my life before this.
Yeah.
But I thought, well, let's get it out of my system. Let's go and
challenge yourself.
30 of the buggers. The last couple of years, I've done haikus, and haikus I'm pretty good at now. They're quite straightforward, but not sonnets. Oh, no.
Ooh, I know. Good luck with that.
Yeah, well, anyhow, back to you. Less of me, more of you, right? So now, okay, something else we want to talk about next is You've got a book on the way, haven't you, as well?
Well, yes, actually. So the collaboration with Ashley continues. So we promote all of the Prickly Pear events through Ashley's Poetic Edge. And Ashley is setting themselves up as a small independent publishing press now. And I am going to be the first published poet through that. And I'm pulling together a collection that Ashley's helping edit and is doing a brilliant job, actually. And so, yeah, sometime towards the end of this year, hopefully for October, we're aiming for October. That'll be out there and available.
Fingers crossed, definitely. So, and
Yeah.
I know you told me already the book is actually currently untitled, but do you have
Yes.
any
Well,
sort of any?
it's got a working title. Yeah. So if you've seen my TEDx talk, in that you'll hear me talk about the end of life regrets and how poetry has helped me be grateful for the life I've got and really have no regrets. And that's the working title of my poetry collection is No Regrets. And I theme it under the five potential end of life regrets. But I mean, if you know what they are, why wouldn't you try and live your life so that you don't have regrets, you know? So,
No, I agree. I agree with you completely. I said so. No, agree. Good luck with
yeah.
it. Definitely. So
Thank you.
we're not revealing any more because
No
that you can keep
secrets now.
top secret. Yeah. See, now everyone people notice to me, I am a hard boiled journalist. This is my deep investigating skills. Mostly because I nagged Ashley about it last
Did
week.
you found out? There you go.
That's why I've been constant pestering, so that's very me for you anyway. So, but no, seriously, good luck with definitely. So, now
Thank you.
there's a couple more things I want to talk about the first half, really. So, but you told me off mic before that you've got what I like to ask what plans you have next for your creativity, and I know you've got something big, but before we do that, there's something
Yes.
I have forgotten to ask you.
One.
Hats.
Oh, hats, yes.
Yeah, if people know you, you're a lady of the hats. If you
This
see
is
you on
true.
stage or on team or Zooms, wherever,
Yep.
where did that come from?
So when I was very, very young, and this is the root of this, Andy, I didn't tell you this offline, but my mum was a single mum, and she knew that if she left me in Woolworths trying on hats, she would find me still there because I loved hats when I was younger. I was probably about 5 or 6 or something, and she just needed to do something. I don't know what it was. Anyway, that's where the trying on hats and playing with hats kind of came from. I guess everyone else was down at the sweet counter in Woolworths, but I was in the hat area trying the hats on. And the first poetry open mics that I went to in Liverpool, I was quite nervous, but I wasn't if I wore a hat. The hat gave me courage, and it was a symbol of
Oh, yeah.
positivity. So, and then since then, I'll be honest, it's just become an obsession. So I just like wearing hats. So yeah, and then being in Doncaster, on the market stall, there's a brilliant stall for hats, which is where this one has come from. And the person who made this used to make hats for the likes of Bono and other rock stars. So I mean, basically, this is my inner rock star coming out here. So,
No, but I like it. Sounds good to me, definitely. So
yeah.
now, another thing we did touch on before, and this is—I see how organised I am tonight. I.e.,
You are organized. Oh.
not because I've forgotten things. Trouble was, as a good tip, people we do podcasts. When you speak to people that you know a fair bit, like we've talked a fair bit, and
Yeah.
then we talk for 20 minutes, or we start pressing the record button, we forget to talk, mention things.
The
Now,
things, yeah.
you mentioned before to me, before we go on to the closing bits is your parents are writers, aren't they? So did that make an influence on you as a writer when you were younger?
Well, my mum encouraged me. So I'd write poetry when I was younger, and I'd share it with my mum, and she loved to listen to it. So, she encouraged me, and she writes now, and she was part of Women Writers in Manchester.
Oh, yeah.
So, and she's written a book, Andy, as well, and self-published it. So, which has a little bit of a poetry in, but that's not the reason she writes. She writes because it's for well-being. And so that writing has always been just a way to process stuff and kind of, you know, keep ourselves well, really. Yeah.
Brilliant. So, fab plug.
And I got back into going to open mics because my stepdad, who also writes humorous poetry, came along with me, and he went on the mic first, and then I followed after him, and that was when I got back into open mics proper, about 6 or 7 years ago.
Right, okay, we'll change gears. What this back to the schedule?
Back to the future.
Back to the future. The scheduled line of questions. After I should have talked to you a minute ago, but yeah. Now you tell me, obviously, you've got some plans coming forward, haven't you, about your business side of your things you want to do?
Yes.
Tell us about that then.
So, poetry is so much more than just a pastime. I think it can add real value to organisations. You know, we hear a lot about the well-being and mental health problems in organisations, and I believe that workshops that use poetry or help people to write their own poetry even can do a lot to bring human-centred leadership into organisations. And so I've got a belief that poetry is leadership. It's there, you know, we get things done through words. And if you're a good leader and you understand the power of poetry and how it can help you understand the human condition better, then you're going to be a better leader. So I do workshops and I use poetry in those workshops. And these are, I developed them during lockdown with my friends. And now I've worked them up to a point where I'm doing them inside organizations.
Ooh. Tell us a bit more about how that works, then, when you're doing them inside organizations.
So somebody may be doing like a leadership program and they want to do something which helps people connect to their emotions and maybe get them to be comfortable with uncertainty. And a lot of people are not comfortable with poetry. So it's a really good vehicle to sort of have them do something that puts them out of their comfort zone, but in a safe way, because basically all they're doing is just writing words and sharing them. But people are really surprised, leaders are really surprised when they write a haiku and it's condensed something about their own resilience that they hadn't realised was important to them. So I get them to do free writes. I get them to listen to poems that are on the theme of, say, resilience or positive relationships. And it just really takes their brain in a different direction. It takes them away from efficiency and problem solving to opportunity and human-centered leadership. It's brilliant.
No, this is great. No, great. Definitely, it's a good look with it. Definitely. So, right.
Thank you.
We'll do the wrap-up point here. I want to give you plenty of time for your poetry today. So, yes. Obviously, that your book's not out yet. So no. People have to wait for that one.
They
do. That'll be another day. Yes. Well, keep them hungry. Keep them keen.
I know.
Oh. Where's the best social media contacts for you then? Obviously, for your Unite, you do Ashley first. That's mostly through Ashley.
Yes.
Tell people about how to do that first of all.
Yeah, so all the Prickly Pear stuff is done through Poetic Edge. Ashley Edge is Eventbrite, and ticketing is through their contact details. I'm a bit tricky, really, because I'm a business poet. I tend to put a lot of my stuff on LinkedIn, which is not a common place for poets to hang out, but I put stuff out there. I've got a website under my business name, which has got videos, Petra Kucha talks and all that sort of stuff, which I love doing. And that's nextstephr.co.uk. And then I do something called the spoken word finale, which is a summary at the end of events. And so you can also find stuff under www.spokenwordfinale.co.uk as well. So there's some stuff on YouTube, but it's just scattered all everywhere, Andy, if I'm honest.
I'm going to say nothing. I'm no better, right? So I'm going to say with that, definitely.
It's scattered throughout social media.
Yeah. Obviously, you're on Facebook anyway. I know that already.
I'm on Facebook, yeah. So if people wanted to get in touch about anything I've said today, just message me there.
Are you on any of the other social medias like Instagram or Twitter?
Yes. So I've come off Twitter because it's just a toxic place to be.
Yeah, it's not my favourite.
I used to like it, but it's just... it's too much anyway to have all these social media. So seriously, LinkedIn is my place that I'm on every day. Facebook, and then my Facebook links with Instagram. So I do go on to Instagram occasionally as well.
Fair play to you then. Right, we'll wrap up part one, folks. See you in 2 minutes. And we're not decided yet how many poems Kate's going to do for us. So this will be sorted out in just deep discussion in between the parts. So see you all soon. Thanks again, Kate.
Spoken.
Hey, guys. Andy N. Stupendously good. Oh, that's a good word. Kate Jenkinson. Now, this should be the reading section, but we have forgotten something, Kate, haven't we?
Yeah, we did. I did. Yes, I did. When you said what's coming up, I got all excited about a workshop I ran recently and talked about poetry and business. What I should have also added is that at the end of this year, I'm working on putting together a poetry and business conference, which will be online. I've already got one speaker who said yes, they're going to kind of open the event. So I'm looking for speakers, sponsors, and then after the Poetry and Business Conference, anybody who wants to do kind of some workshops associated with the themes that we're going to be showing people what poetry can do. So things like well-being or leadership or innovation and creativity. So it's going to have themes. So if anyone thinks that sounds interesting, definitely get in touch with me.
Quick question with this, obviously. I know, obviously, yeah, it's still going to be up in the air a bit at the minute. Is it going to be an online event or in person?
Yes. No, it's definitely online, Andy, because obviously it's quite an investment in my time to organise, so I need to keep costs down. And I want to make sure it gets as wide a reach as possible, and it'll get more people coming to it online, I think, than sort of as a face-to-face event for the first time anyway.
Yeah, again, of course. No, good luck with definitely some of that. So keep us informed. So, right, okay. That should be the end of part one now. So,
yes, it is.
On to Kate. She's going to do, not how many poems, should we give people a hint how many poems you're going to do, Kate?
Well, I was saying to you that the collection I've got coming out has got 5 sections. So I thought I would theme the poems against those sections so you can see what the collection's going to be like. Yeah, so there'll be 5.
Yeah, which I think is a great idea. So, right, you're going to hear this saying a lot in the second half, because I use it all the time. Less of me, more of you. So, over to Kate. Take it away, Kate, your first poem.
All right, thanks, Andy. So the first section in the book is under the theme, I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself and not the life others expected of me. And one of the first poems that I used to take to the open mics before lockdown was something called Cookie Cutter Creativity. So this is that poem. Despite the fact that children are not made of clay, we're going to judge their talents in a cookie cutter way. We decide the rules of play, the A's, B's, C's and D's, and we'll label everything they say. So they will fail to succeed unless they tick our box in a cookie cutter way. We've made it very clear the answer must be ours. Their originality and lateral thinking are a waste of their thinking powers. They must learn to curb creative thought and learn everything by rote. So no matter if they're bored, unless it ticks our box, their thinking is clearly flawed. And despite the fact that children are not made of clay, we're going to judge their talents in a cookie cutter way. So it really is annoying when they interpret someone's poem with a phrase or form that does not conform, because it means I cannot tick the box that says they understand how to behave in a cookie-cutter way. And it's even more frustrating when their talent shines all day, but they won't let me catch it and control it because they are not made of clay, and it's so much easier to compare them in a cookie-cutter way. So now they are all labelled wrong. And we're both disturbed by this. But rather than it be our problem, it's clearly they who've got it wrong. So please change your personalities, children, to reflect our worldview. Then we can tick our little box, which dispenses with the problem that is you. And yet, despite the fact that people are not made of clay, organisations persist their measuring in a cookie-cutter way. And our collective creativity will be performance managed away. So the human work experience is only ever shades of beige. And despite the fact that not one of us is made of clay, we will only ever recognise you in a cookie cutter way. The expectations are our own and the distribution normal. The categories are now only 3, does not meet, meets, exceeds. And the conversation's formal. But I will not be fired in someone else's kiln. I am not glazed to meet the norms. I've never been made of clay. So I'm making creativity my enterprise. And it's time to throw that cookie cutter away.
I love the repetition use of that one, Kate, because I've not heard that one before. But I think when you're doing a poem that's got a bit of repetition like that, there's one or two ways you do it. Yeah, you did it dead right there. When you're talking about either chucking the repetition out the window or just doing it, using a completely different ending that disregards what the repetition did. Now you did it dead right with chucking the cookie cupper away, definitely.
Now, definitely.
With it being a poem that has had quite a bit of repetition in it,
yeah,
was it quite a tricky poem to get the rhythm right on that piece?
It kind of came to me in one piece because I was so angry with the way that the school was treating my daughter at the time that it just came out as though it was a teacher's voice kind of, you know. So no, it came quite easily in terms of rhythm. The ending is something that I've really struggled with. I've changed that ending about four times. So it might change. It might change when it gets published. You never know. It could look entirely different.
Yeah. You know, get your own about it. It's one of the, if you're doing pieces like that, sometimes it can be notoriously tricky to get right. Definitely that one. So yeah, no, I agree with you. I'm one of these, definitely one of these sort of people where I can go through 15, 20 drafts on a poem sometimes. And I'll be ripping my hair out by the end of it. And I suspect you're probably the same, aren't you? So,
well, I didn't used to be, I'll be honest. But I think the more I've really worked hard on my poetry, saying what I want it to say for an audience, than I have, I do edit it now. I didn't used to.
I think you do, because when you take it more serious, it's, you're looking at it in a different way all the time. And you sometimes, I think, when you first start writing poetry, it's a case of throwing it all out.
Yes. And,
but when you think about it more carefully, that's how you, I mean, your approach changes on it. So no, I think it's a fantastic piece. So anyway, less of me, more of you. On to you for section number two.
So this is a short, small poem, but it's under the section, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. And I'm just going to get you the title, because I kind of been changing my titles around a bit as well with these poems. So, yeah, not that one. This one. It might be the last one in the section. It's called Aging. Who would be so foolish as to compare the youthful beauty of the dawning sun with the wisdom of her face at dusk when all her radiance abounds? Our sunset nights are the most profound. In your changing face of beauty, trust. There you go, a short one.
You tease, you cut me right out then. I thought you were going to go much longer then.
Seriously, when I say short poems, I mean short. I'm not the kind of person who says short and then does another 3-minute set.
Yeah, I know people that do, right? So, and that's why I thought for a minute then. But there's a lady on I know from Stockport, Linda Cosgrove, and she's not a Zoom poet at all. When she says short poems, they use about 3 lines.
Oh, well, I've got a couple of those, but yeah, they're not going to. Yeah, they're usually out on social media, those ones.
Yeah, that's fair play to you. Anyway, tell us about that piece. And where did the inspiration behind this piece come from?
So I know I said I'm not on Twitter anymore, but I used to be. And I used to like to write stuff that would work into the count. I can't remember how many characters it was. And that was one of those poems. Yeah, and I was just going through the menopause and feeling quite frustrated at work. And also it's, you know, women needing to stay youthful and that kind of thing. And it's like, I think we're beautiful all the way through our lives, wrinkles and everything. So, yeah, it was just a piece to say I'm happy with what I look like.
Yeah, that's fair play. No, fair play to you. That. I'm a firm believer in that sort of thing myself. So you're beautiful no matter what age you are, if you look after yourself. So, no, agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed completely. So, right, anyway, less of me. Or you, Sassy. I will drill the saying into your head from today. Okay.
Right. So, all going to plan, my next section in the collection, I see how that rhymed. I love a rhyme. I wish I'd stayed in touch with my friends. And the interesting thing about this section is I didn't have much poetry for it, so I actually have had to write a few new pieces. So this one is even called I Wish I'd Stayed in Touch with My Friends. I wonder why I have no friends. I wish I'd stayed in touch. I wish you were still here. I wonder at all the letters I never sent. SOS messages bobbing lost at sea. I think of all the time I wasted. I think of all the love I wasted. There are many different kinds of friend. My heart is driftwood in the sea. We cannot hug if we fear to touch. I miss you now you're absent. Your voice is the one thing I long to hear. Your absence casts a shadow here. I think of all the joy I wasted. Your flowers pressed have no scent. Solitude can sometimes be a friend. Your old letters smell of your touch. I may long for you, but will never see. As I often look wistfully out to sea, it's when I notice most you are not here. Our hands in each other's warmth in touch. Our friendship was never wasted. I didn't know what made you a special friend. I never thought beyond the present. I wish your goodbyes were never sent. Broken apart by things I couldn't see. I have no one else to call my friend. Recalling conversations I no longer hear, I think of all the hope I wasted. I miss your closeness and your touch. Time twists away as I strain to touch your memories. Their melancholy scent reminds me of the life I've wasted, watching footprints washed away by sea, leaving me stranded, always alone here, when all I wanted was you, my friend. Could I have stayed in touch? I was no friend to you. I see now how much effort you wasted, trying to be present for me. To be here, to be loved.
Beautiful, absolutely beautiful. I real quite touching, changing gears on that one, Nancy Kate. I can well relate to that myself then, because certainly, like, I think the older you get sometimes is you drift away from people, or some people anyway, that you've known for a long time. And I think lockdown did that to me, and I drifted away from probably half a dozen people.
Yeah.
In some cases, I've known for 30 years.
Yeah.
You do, it's like it goes that way. That's a really beautiful piece. So
thank you. And it's a form poem, and for the life of me I can't remember what form it is, but all the end lines, you know, finish with the same words, and name for it.
I'm hopeless at them, so don't even bother asking
me. So we'll just have to let those who are listening here's your puzzle. What form is that poem? Is it a sestina? Is it I can't remember.
Well, it's certainly not a sonnet anyway, that's for sure.
It's not a sonnet, and it's not a haiku.
Yeah. I didn't get the obvious rhymes in it, so it's quite, if it's rhymes, it's soft rhyme, don't you? So
It's the end words all finish with the same end words, and then they move to different lines. So that's kind of like
Yeah, it'd be one of those sort of like a sestina or something, but that's non-rhyme. It could be a sestina. We're out seeing the piece of paper on page.
I'll have to go away and Google it. I know. Anyway.
Yeah, we'll find. Well, let's move on now. Well, that was the first three. Well, next week we've
watched. Yes. So, yes.
On to you for number four then. Right, okay. Less of me, plenty more of you.
So this next section is I wish I'd had the courage to express how I truly felt, which when you think for poetry is perfect, isn't it? So I'm going to pick one by random, I think, because I haven't decided which this is going to be. So you might have to edit this section as I go and ah. So I wish I'd had the courage to express my feelings. This one's called Love Equals, and it's after a poem by Roger Robinson, A Portable Paradise. And when you sat me, trembling, on your knee, unable to speak my terror through sobs of another maths lesson I couldn't bear, you took me home. All day I played shop, selling ice cream cones of cotton wool, gaining confidence to show up again at school. And in my pocket, a rough, blue, rubbed round eraser, so I could remember that I am not defined by my long division mistakes.
Excellent. Really, really good stuff. I do like Roger Robinson's stuff as well. So I really know him most from his work he does with the book on the King Midas Sound Project. And that's because I like the book. It's not always going to be easy to listen to that stuff. But yeah, big fan of Roger Robinson, definitely. So how did you get into his work then?
I go to a lot of workshops, Andy, so I think it was a poem that was brought to one of those workshops that we were asked to write a response to. So that's how I ended up reading the poem and kind of doing a response to it.
Yeah, it's a great piece, really, is that. So really quite a beautiful little piece, that. So anyway, I'm not going to say the same now. Off to you for the big finale. Right.
So this is a poem that I wrote actually in another workshop, but I've not done many poetry films, but I did this as one, and it was called Hope, actually, but I've renamed it Respair, which is an old English word that means to regain hope, and I shared it during lockdown, and it got quite a few views. Anyway, it's Hope. There is a content warning for this one. The content warning is for suicidal ideation and depression, but I promise you it gets better towards the end. I'd like to grasp the word hope, but the sharp possibilities are razor blades incising my past from my future, and hope, the bridge in between, shaking and rattling my nerves, slowly shattering, and hope, although etched in my brain, finds no fertile place in my heart. With my hand extends, with my veins stretched blue, exposed on my wrist, I shrug. Is it easier to end this or exist with the pain? Even hope with its hurting is worth me exerting myself beyond the all too familiar fear. I sense hope is near. I'd like to grasp the familiarity of hope, for when hope seemed to have abandoned me, poetry stood by, ever there to find the words I couldn't hear. Poetry reminded me that hope surges when pessimism pours cold water on the fire of adventure. Hope sizzles and spits her furious desire to be relit. Relit. Hope is the sunset on an imperfect day, the sleeping rays resting and re-energizing, darkness consuming all our fears, so in the morning, hope dawns and reappears. She accompanies me in every new and challenging experience, her belief and sheer resilience to cope with life's ups and downs. I feel her gentle presence. Hope holds my hand and whispers affirmations. Her reassurance understands, recharging my determination to survive, inspiring my curiosity. Hope keeps me alive.
Bravo, bravo with that. Yeah, I agree with you. You've tackled a very difficult subject with that piece there. I think you've done it in a way that definitely it's got a content warning. It has to be, but you've done it where you give hope at the end of it, and hope is an important thing. What without hope, what is it?
Exactly. And poetry inspires hope for me. It has done throughout my life. Yeah,
same for me as well. It's pulled me through some difficult times, and I can now do it. Like I say, I've used to pull people with difficult times as well. So
yes,
it's been a pleasure today, Kate. Definitely with that.
Thank you, Andy.
Yeah, it's trouble if you do spoken label for a while. I often have lists of people I want to get on, and sometimes it just never happens for years or whatever reason. I should have had you on spoken label about a year ago, people are wondering, and storm my bloody life anyway. So anyway, we will talk further off mic, because I'm gonna speak to you about your book, because I've got a few questions for you off mic. So anyway, guys, October. Get Kate's book, currently title to be revealed. We'll see you all soon, okay? Take care, guys and girls. As Don Callis over at AEW says, stay safe and stay over.
Spoken Label.